Everybody, I'm Jeanette. I'm an addict and alcoholic. I'm glad to be here too. Good to be here. It's been said now enough. Happy birthday, Cocaine Anonymous, right? Happy 41 years. You know, a couple of people were sitting in an AA meeting and they wanted to talk about drugs. You know, they wanted to be able to talk about the stigma, the thing that has them crippled, you know, and there's absolutely a therapeutic value in one addict talking to another. It absolutely makes a difference. If I'm sitting in a room talking to somebody who talks my language, who understands me, y'all my people. Y'all is my people. The people of, I love Cocaine Anonymous. You know, there's no other fellowship like Cocaine Anonymous, right? My very first meeting was a CA meeting, a Cocaine Anonymous meeting. And I've been here in Cocaine Anonymous ever since that time. Thanks for having me. Thanks for asking me. Rob, thanks for putting my name in the hat. Appreciate that. You know, I wanted to say most impressed, but there have been a few things that have impressed me this weekend. You know, but I am very impressed with this table that I sat and had dinner with people under 3 years and under doing all this service work. There were at least three or four people at that table that served on the committee. Erin specifically called me, right? Thank you, Erin. Her hospitality has been especially gracious. I appreciate it. You know, and from the moment the very first phone call, Rob called and said, will you speak at our convention? You know, in pure Jeanette and Rob conversation fashion, right? You know, will you speak at our convention? When is it? November. Sure. Okay, I'm going to have the speaker chair call you. All right, bye. Right? And sure enough, she called me, you know, and I'm like, I can send you a tape. She's like, well, I'm just going to ask you a few questions, you know. And so she asked me a few questions, and I think I was in the car driving, I believe, when she called me, you know. And I rattled off a little bit about me, you know, who I am and what I do, man. You know, I'm a crackhead who had the privilege to be able to stay here, right? You know, I started smoking freaking crack, dude. That was the deal, right? You know, and one day at a time, I get to stay here. You know, I think I told her, she asked me how much, you know, people, how much time you guys have? 24 hours. Who got up the earliest today, right? You know, because I can only do this 24 hours at a time. That's it. That's it, that's all, no more. What I did yesterday might hold me over a little bit. It might, but you know, I was taught that I need to do something every day for my sobriety. You know, I gotta put in. You know, so thank you. You know, one of my biggest joys is to see new people come in here and stay. You know, to see a newcomer come in here and to see them come back the next week, right? And to come back again the next week, you know, and before you know it, you got, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, a year, you know, that big old fat year. You get that year and then you gotta wait. It's like, dang, now I gotta stay sober for another whole, now six. See, I didn't get an 18, I still got a resentment because I didn't get an 18 month chip. I didn't get that 18 month chip, but then you know, you gotta wait and you get that 18 months. right? And then, you know, you get that 1 year or that next year. And by then, you know, I've been told, and yeah, so I don't know if there was a disclaimer read, because I'm probably going to say some stuff that ain't got nothing to do with the big book or none of that stuff. You know, but they say it takes 21 days to form a habit. You know, and so by then, by the time you get to 18 months, you know, hopefully, you know, my sponsor, my first AA meeting was 2 days after treatment. And I'm gonna go there a little bit. But my first AA meeting was 2 days into treatment, where I met my sponsor. You know, it was a pretty big meeting. And I heard relapse is not a requirement. You know, I heard, a lot of people tell their story and talk about what was going on, and relapse is not a requirement. We don't hear that. We don't hear that a lot anymore. We don't hear, you know, but you got to do what you got to do. Whatever it takes is what it takes, right? I got here. My bottom was, you know, no call, no show at work. You know, couldn't leave the house anymore. Couldn't leave the house. I couldn't get dinner done. You know, it was about nothing but the crack cocaine at that point. You know, and I started out at 14 years old, rolling big fat pink joints and drinking tall cans of Strohs. That's the way it started out. I promise you, as time went on, it didn't matter what the brand was. We last night sitting there listening, and somebody mentioned, I think Gary mentioned Pabst. And I told Sean, it's like, man, you could get drunk off some Pabst, boy. We used to get lit off some Pabst, and it didn't take a whole lot of them. So it didn't matter the brand at all, right? You know, but that's the way it started off for me in Fitza MD 2020. In the gangway with the boys, okay? In the gangway with the boys, you know, and my journey always included the boys. I hung out with the boys, right? You know, that's who I got high with, that's who I smoke with. You know, I had one best girlfriend. My father would take me to school. It was probably a 45 minute walk. So my father would take me to school, drop me off. I walked the horseshoe, and I went somewhere, but it wasn't in the door of the high school. You know, I would go back home, because by the time I walked back home, they were gone to work, you know, and the party was on, you know, or I walk up to the bus stop and catch the bus to my boyfriend's house, who lived in the city, you know, and spend the day in the basement with my boyfriend, listening to music, smoking joints, and drinking beer. And that was high school for me, you know. And that was my beginning, you know. And I'm gonna fast forward through this, because I know, you know, we've been sitting in here for a while, But that was my beginning, you know, and I did not graduate high school. When I first got here, I wouldn't tell you all that I didn't graduate high school, you know, but I ended up testing for the GED, you know, and miraculously passed on the very first try. Don't ask me how, but I did. I passed on the very first try. Met a boy at the laundromat, and we went down to City Hall and got married. For real. Like, for real, we did that. And we went home and to my mother's house, and that's where we lived. And until his sister, he had a sister who moved out to California. And so we jumped on a bus and moved to sunny California. You know, where, you know, the land of milk and honey, that's where, you know, everybody wants to go, and you're going to make it happen. Talk about a fast forward into hitting a bottom that much faster. My God, I could not keep up with the women in Compton. That's where I live. I wouldn't tell you I lived in Compton, when I first got here, but that's where I lived, was in Compton. And, you know, they were smoking Sherms. You know, I couldn't keep up with the Sherms. You know, I would take a hit and end up in the bedroom on my face, literally. You know, and eventually he and I got an apartment, you know. And I remember living out in Los Angeles, and I remember I knew that our apartment faced the ocean, towards the ocean. And I can remember standing on the balcony of that apartment complex, knowing at 19 years old that there was some place that I belonged, and there was some place that I was supposed to be, and there was something that I was supposed to be doing. I had no idea what that was. You know, and we lasted out there barely a year or two. And I remember coming back home on a Greyhound bus that takes, what, days to get home from LA to St. Louis. I live in St. Louis, Missouri. And I was sitting next to a lady who had a bag full of peppermint schnapps. And we sat on that bus driving home, down in peppermint schnapps all the way from California, from Long Beach all the way to St. Louis, and shoving them under the bus. Every time the bus stopped, you hear ching-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling from all the bottles that we shoved under the seats of the bus. You know, and getting home, and you know, he was my first divorcee because he was an alcoholic, right? He ended up coming back to St. Louis too, but he was an alcoholic. And that relationship went nowhere fast. And I walked out of that relationship with the shirt on my back. And my sister introduced me to the man who she thought I should marry. You know, and he was a good man, and I did marry him, husband number two, and he's the father of my children. He also became, you know, he also became my dope man, literally, because he would buy. It turned into him buying the drugs for the people that he worked with, and. You know, by then, I'm on fast track to hit bottom. I'm on a fast track to hit a bottom. You know, by then, he would buy the dope, and I'm crawling on the floors, to, you know, in the bedroom. He's hiding it from me, but I gotta have it. You know, I gotta have it. You know, at one point, there was a time when he had hid the dope from me, and I knew that it was in this toolbox, like this big, gigantic toolbox in the basement with a lock on it, right? I had this big, gigantic, like, dang, I'm gonna get in that. I knew the dope was in that toolbox. So I'm at the point, if you can't go to work at this point, you know, and you busting open toolboxes to get in to get the dope, you're about ready to hit bottom, right? And so I took the toolbox and I drove around. We had this little car that the doors wouldn't close on it. It was like rigged up. And I'm driving around town with this toolbox full of cocaine in it, holding the door, looking for a, what do you call them? Locksmith to get that open for me. And first place was like, no, and they couldn't do it. And I went, but I found, of course, the good addict that I am. You know, kind of like that whole, I'm sorry, Aaron, looking at you here, like that bidding war, we just freaking won't give up, will we? We just don't stop, do we? You know, we can't say no. We can't say no. It's so hard for us to pull back and say no, right? You know, if we are determined, you know what, we really are skilled people. We got some skills. We got some skills. But I found somebody to open that toolbox for me, and I went home and I made it happen. You know, I was, you know, and it didn't matter to me. You know, wet, dry beauties, you know, the lewds, you know, the when the acid was on blotted on the paper, you know, I'd chew a piece of paper up, piece of cardboard like it was nothing. And before I smoked crack, of course, I was the tutor. I was the person who couldn't put no more dope up my, I couldn't put no more up my nose. You know, it was to the point that I just had to put it in my hand and just lick it, right? Because I couldn't get any more up there, you know. I earned my seat. In other words, I deserve my seat, you know. You know, and even the first meeting of AA that I sat in and I listened to them men talk, you know, I sat there and I listened and I was like, damn, I'm an alcoholic. You know, there was never a time that I smoked any dope. There was never a time that I put any drugs in my body without a drink. You know, the drink was always there for me. There was always the beer or the wine fits. Right, a brass monkey. I love to do fits, a brass monkey by myself. I'm not sharing, right? I ain't sharing, you know. And I was probably a blackout drink because there were many mornings, you know, that and places, spaces and places that I ended up that I had absolutely no place to be. I am very, very fortunate to be alive. I've been in some situations that there was absolutely no way in California. There was no way that I should have been able to walk out. None. Absolutely none. Downtown St. Louis, even then, there was a time when I had to sneak up out of the basement. You know, never once abused, you know, because we got skills, right? And I snuck up out of that basement and I went upstairs and I told that man's family that he told me to come up and ask to use the telephone. I was probably 16 years old. And called my mother to come and pick me up. What's the address here? Can you tell me what the address is? You know, and they gave me the address, and I called my mother, and she came and picked me up. Hanging out downtown, 4th of July, on the riverfront, watching fireworks with my big sister, and end up in some man's basement. You know, there were many, many, many occasions like that of things that happened, you know. Of course, that was all before husband number two. So then husband number two came along. You know, there were times when, you know, I can remember a Christmas when we had company and, you know, we served martinis and you have to use vermouth, you know, and at the end, when there was no money and there was no dope in it, and I ransacked the house and I find just vermouth. Do you know what vermouth is? Man, whoo, that's nasty. Whoo, that's nasty. You know, but I had to drink it, right? I had to take that drink, you know? I had to have that, you know? But it just didn't matter to me what it was. And eventually I did, I hit that bottom. No call, no show at work. You know, at the end, I was at the dope house. You know, that was when the little thunders migrated from the West Coast and started migrating east, you know, and they come with the yellow crack, right? The big plate fulls of it, right? And I was there. I was at the dope house. You know, what behooved me to answer the door at the dope house? I still don't understand what that was all about. But I answered the door, and my husband was standing at the door, and he grabbed me in the collar. He said, "What in the hell do you think you're doing?" And that began the process of needing to go get some help. You know, because I'd taken the VCR out the house, started taking, you know, his stuff out, the cameras and, you know, the electronics, and, you know, the money orders weren't getting sent to the mortgage company. They was going back to the to the post office and getting cashed, and you know, all those things were happening. You know, the bottom was there. And I remember getting out the yellow pages, right? The yellow pages, and calling my parents and saying, I got a problem, I need to get some help. And they both came to the house, they both came there. And we found a place for me to go and get treatment. And I went there, and I remember, you know, I had to wait. You know, you had to wait for the bed. So you go in, you get the interview. As soon as the bed becomes available. So when he went to work, he would take me to my mother's house. So he dropped me, so I had to be babysat now, right? So he'd take me to my mother's house, and she would allow me to drink every day while I was there. I would easily drink at least a half pint of Bacardi. You know, my other drink was Bacardi and Coke, right? And so while I was waiting for my bed at the treatment center at my mother's house, every day I was down in, you know, at least a half pint of Bacardi and Coke. Going into that treatment center, 28 days inpatient. And it was back in the days when they would, you know, the people would come and to the treatment centers and pick up the patients and take them to outside meetings, right? And they come in these little cars, and we'd stuff 10 of us in the little Pintos and go out to the meetings, right? You know, those were the days, man. That was some good time recovery back then, right? And I remember sitting in that first meeting, 2 days in treatment, and hearing those people talk and realizing that I'm an alcoholic. You know, I didn't go to treatment. I did not go there to stop using. That was not why I went there. I went there because I couldn't make it to work anymore. You know, and I couldn't get the bills paid anymore. I didn't go there to quit. You know, and they had a Cocaine Anonymous meeting on the ward at this treatment center, at this hospital. That meeting still exists today. It's my very first CA home group. And I remember the end of the line. And I remember sitting in that meeting, the meeting would start at 8 p.m., and they would let everybody in the room. We'd be there till 11 o'clock at night. So they let everybody that was in the room share. You know, and at some point, I realized that when they was reading, you know, how, of course, we were reading how it works then, right? You know, when they would read how it works, and I was like, dang, okay, that's what's on the wall, okay? That must mean something, you know? And that first AA meeting that I went to, you know, this guy took me by the arm and took me up to this lady and said, ask her to be your sponsor. And I stood there like a deer in the headlights, and she said, do you want me to be your sponsor? And I said, yes. You know, and that lady is still my sponsor today. You know, she knows absolutely 100% everything about me. It's a must. You know, I have to share everything. I have to be open. You know, I have to be honest. I learned how to do that in this program. You know, first 30, 60, 90 days, I don't know, she started a meeting. And she gave me the keys and said, here, you're going to chair the meeting. And you show up there every Friday night, you open the door. You know, 90 days sober, that's where my service work began. That's where it all began for me. She gave me the keys to the door and told me to open the door and chair the meeting. And I showed up every Friday night. And sometimes there'd be two people there, and sometimes there'd be 10 people there. But I was always there. You know, I'm one of those people that, you know, from the very beginning, no matter what it was that she told me to do, I've always done whatever it was she told me to do. You know, that whole honest, open-minded, and willingness, I would call her and literally just regurgitate, just like, bah! Like, let it all out, like, dump. You know, and I believe that that's very important, especially in the beginning. You know, even going in meetings, I would literally sit in meetings and block out faces and just open up and share. It's like being able to get that stuff out. Rob said the word, trust. He said that word. You know, who do you trust? You know, and I was that person, and I think I heard Gary talk about it a little bit, or somebody, maybe it was in one of the workshops today. You know, people can't, who can hurt you? You know, in my mind, if I'm sitting in the meeting and I'm sharing, you know, those people in that AA meeting, they was like, man, we love it when you come to the meetings, you tell great stories, right? And I'm like, dude, I'm talking about what happened to me in my this past week. This is stuff that happened to me in my life this past week, because I would go in meetings and I would share about what it was that was going on with me. You know, it's important to get that stuff outside of my head. You know, that was a part of the recovery process for me. You know, and so I learned to trust my sponsor. You know, and she worked the steps with me. You know, that in the beginning, right out of treatment, I remember, you know, there was a girl in treatment, and I'm talking on the phone with her, and she's trying to get to her house because she had dope. And it's like, come on over. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, you know, we're going to get high, yeah, and you know, and so I called my sponsor, and I was like, man, this is girl, you know, that I was in treatment with, and so she's, you know, I'm going to go over her house, and she said, how about I come and pick you up, you know, and she did, and she came and picked me up, and she took me to one of the facilities, and she said, okay, now I want you to go in there and pick up the phone, and I want you to call that girl and ask her not to call you anymore, and you not call her anymore. You know, and again, that just that whole process of me just talking to her about everything that's going on in my head and everything that's going on in my life, because I can't trust my own thinking. You know, especially, and I can't trust my own thinking today, on a good day most days, right? Need to run it by somebody. You know, so it's still, you know, and it was about just learning how to tell her what's going on, talk to somebody about what's going on. And so I did that, you know, and I developed that level of trust with her, you know, and working that first fourth step where I wrote that stuff down, you know, and, you know, starting with the three columns, and it turned into the novel, you know, you know, and it was, and that's what it was, and it was on a, you know, one of them yellow legal pads, and that's what it was, you know, and I went and I sat down to do that fifth step with her, and there was that one thing that I just couldn't tell. It's like, I can't tell her this, yeah, tell her everything. You know, and it haunted me for about 4 or 5 months. It haunted me. And I called her up and I told her, it's like, you know, there's something that I left out, something that I forgot. And went back and shared it with her. And from that point on, you know, I literally call her up and regurgitate. You know, I get it all out. I let her know what's going on. You know, this is at about, and then I got involved in my district. I got involved in my district. This is a program of action, man. And, you know, at 10, I remember at about 10 years sober, I was gonna leave the area. They had pissed me off. You know? You know, it's like, I'm done, not going. She's like, Jeanette, service is your lifeline. You know, you're one of those people who have been so involved in service. You know, you don't get to quit. You don't get to not go. You know, I read somewhere recently where did it say, combining humility and gratitude. I think that was in our reading in the Quiet Peace today. You know, talked about combining humility and gratitude. that's too big for me, man. It's like, how do you, you know, to do that, you know, to do that stuff, man. It takes a lot. It takes, you know, surrender, you know, it takes, you know, and we're talking like over and over and every single day, just over and over and over and over, surrender. You know, turning all things in to the Father of Light who presides over us all. I just, today my life is still about a whole bunch of service. It's, you know, Cocaine Anonymous is my life. This fellowship is my life. Recovery, living a life of recovery. It's just what we do. This is what we do. This is who we are. This is what we made of. You guys are my family. Rob is my family. You guys are my family. You know, Aaron now is my family. You know, Beth, absolutely. You know, we're sitting in the workshop and, you know, the little baby started to cry and the girl, it's like, you don't have to leave. You know, our kids grew up in these rooms together. Our children know each other. You know, the meeting, we had babysitters at the meeting. You know, this program, I'm not the person who thought I would come in here and get this. I'm not the person. I'm not that person who thought for one single minute that I would come here and stay here. This is not, you know, I definitely, absolutely would have sold myself short. Because this, the life I have today is amazing, absolutely amazing. At some point I got, I didn't get to lead an area. At some point they elected me a delegate, right? And I get to, you know, continue doing this service stuff. And I get to meet people like Rob, you know? I get to be involved in literature for this fellowship. I get to be involved in, you know, continuing to carry the message to this fellowship. You know, that's what's important, is making the connections with the new people in this fellowship. You know, the new people, the new man that comes in here, you know, what does it take? You know, because the dope out there today is a whole lot different than the dope that was out there then. You know, and there's a whole lot of people dying out there. You know, like for real, for real. You know, what can I do today for the man that still suffers? You know, I came in here and I found out that I'm full of self. You know, and so today my program, my life is about trying to be about others. You know, keeping an open hand, being willing to take somebody's hand, you know, that needs help. But guess what? You got to ask for it. We got, you know, they got, but we need to make ourselves available to them so that they can ask for it, right? I'm grateful that it's a one day at a time program, because it absolutely is a one day at a time program. All we get is a 24-hour reprieve. You know, I don't get what I did yesterday doesn't count for today, not at all. I'm gonna wrap it up. I don't need to sit here and ramble about how good this program is and how good my life is and what this program means, because I think we live it. It's about living it, and it's about doing it. And that's what we're gonna do, and that's what it's gonna be. I'm you know, one day at a time. We're gonna just continue to lift up, to be here for the next suffering addict, to be here for the next suffering alcoholic. I don't know that I have much more to share. Um, I've met some absolutely incredible people all over the world. It's a worldwide fellowship. Let me just talk about Zoom real quick, because you know when that whole pandemic, the pandemic hit, and CA just jumped into action, right? We got skills again. We just jump right in there. You know, what needs to happen? Because I need to go to meetings. You know, I need to get my fix. I need to be able to do this. I need to be able to recover. You know, leave me at home by myself long enough and it's a disaster, right? It can be a disaster. And so CA did. CA just jumped right in there right away. And Zoom was up and going. And I've met some, there's people in this room right now that I've met on Zoom meetings that I've never seen in person. Yes. Yeah. You guys have some phenomenal members of Cocaine Anonymous here in Denver. You really, really do. You really, really do. And I'm impressed with so much that's happening here. Take it and run with it. Continue with it. You know, continue to support each other. Continue to show up in H&I. I heard somebody say, we got some H&I slots. You know, pick up the courage, because literally that's what it takes. You know, a little bit of courage. Just a little bit of courage. You know, finding that God of your understanding. You know, because that's what happened to me. You know, my sponsor helped me to find the God of my, I didn't have to have the God that my parents drug me to church on Sundays. You know, it was, of course, as soon as I got to the age that I didn't have to go, I stopped going. You know, when I read the literature and it said, you know, all it takes is just a little bit of faith, you know, and you can have the God of your own understanding, man, and what a wonderful thing, because it ain't got to be like this burning bush or this big old huge thing. You know, it's about just following a few simple rules. I did what my sponsor asked me to do. It was that simple. I just very simply did what my sponsor asked me to do. And I did what she asked me to do because I told her what was going on with me. So she knew what was going on with me, right? She knew what was going on. So she could very easily give me directions. It's a fabulous life. It really is. You know, my worst day sober beats any of those days using, any of them, absolutely any of them. And if I'm able to get sober, anybody can get sober. You know, I said it earlier, God has no favorites. You know, it's big and it's roomy and there's space for all of us. You know, it just takes a little bit of courage. To find somebody that you can trust. You know, if there's any little bitty thing that's going on, even right now, any little bitty thing that's going on, because it's, you know, it's the little bitty things that will turn into something big, and before you know it, I heard somebody say that. You know, if I start telling just one little lie, guess what, before I know it, you know, I'm off and running. So I got to keep, you know, I'm as sick as my secrets. I got to keep my side of the street clean. And it just takes constant work. One alcoholic, one addict, with helping another, sitting at the kitchen table. This ain't my gig right here. My gig is getting out a big book and sitting at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee and helping you get down to causes and conditions. That's what I like to do. That's the stuff that, you know, where we can make some progress and life begins to get different and things start to turn around, you know, and I ain't gotta be the same old person tomorrow that I was yesterday. You know, I ain't gotta be the same person today that I was yesterday, because I'm willing to put forth the effort to do the work, you know, and it's good. Change is scary. You know, it can be a big scary life out there. It's a big scary world out there, but it's really not. My world has shrunk so much. It's not as big and scary as it used to be. And it just comes from, you know, 24 hours a day, you know, learning how to put my trust in a higher power, in a God of my understanding, in other people, with being genuine and being open and honest. You know, trust doesn't come, you know, it's not given, it's earned. Trust is earned, right? You know, and so I have an opportunity to bring my best self to the table when I show up. You know, and how do I bring my best self to the table when I show up? What are the things that I have to do in order to make that happen? You know, and it's working these steps. I got to work the steps in all my affairs. I don't get to pick and choose. You know, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps. You know, do some service, clean house. And that's who we are today. That's Cocaine Anonymous today. You know, Eric is a rock star. He's an absolute rock star. I can see how and why you all. he does a little bit of this and does a little bit of that, and he's just, you know, he's putting himself in, you know, and there's space for so much and so many people and so many things. All we got to do is show up. I don't know when your district meeting is, or if you have a district, or when your area meeting is, but there are opportunities for everybody in all kinds of service positions. And just even with this, the simplest thing is sponsorship. So with that, I'm gonna close. I just don't even know what else to tell you guys other than I love you. If nobody's told you that they love you today, I do. I absolutely love you. I guess we're gonna have some more fun tonight in fellowship. So thank you for having me. I appreciate your hospitality 100%. Yep, you guys are kind. You're kind. Thank you.